Blog Talk Radio.
Portuguese. Ironically, he never sailed. He wasn't a sailor, but he made Portugal a maritime power equal to that of Spain and challenging Britain and France and the Dutch at that time. Today also is the birthday of the great Baroque composer Antonio Vivaldi. Recently, they found a lot of his music in a monastery. Bound together and had been sitting there for a couple hundred years. Great composer. In 1747, Kazimierz Pulaski was born. He is the father of the U.S. Cavalry. It isn't General Custer or Phil Sheridan. Kazimierz came from Poland, and he was killed in battle over here. And there's quite a few streets named after him. There's a big street in Chicago named after him. And, of course, Chicago has a very large Polish ethnic population. And also my in-laws are Polish. and, of course, we don't forget the Irish ethnics. And we're coming up for the week of St. Patrick's Day. We will have our annual, some of the things you didn't know about the Irish and some of the things you don't want to know about the Irish. some of it is tongue-in-cheek and some of it is I should hold my tongue. you heard the name Lefty O'Doul. It's a famous bar here in San Francisco. He's the one who organized Japanese baseball. American baseball is very popular over in Japan. Do you play bridge? Charles Gorin, his birthday today. You ever stayed in the Helmsley Hotel? Well, Harry Helmsley was born on this day. Of course, his wife is the notorious, the late and unlamented Leona. I believe Helmsley was originally born Jewish, Jewish heritage, Jewish religious heritage, and became a Lutheran. Here's another Jewish ethnic boy, John Garfield, whose original name, famous actor, New York, was actually Garfinkel. I don't think he was related to Garfinkel of Simon and Garfinkel. And great Russian conductor, composer, Gennady Radzivensky, his birthday. Among the deaths today, another priest was hanged in Britain because he became a priest. It was during the persecution of the Roman Catholic Church after Henry VIII left the Roman Catholic Church. Another great composer died on this day, Gregor Telemann, famous Russian writer, Nicholas Gogol. The guy who started the Disciples of Christ, Ronald Reagan, his mother was a disciple of Christ, although his father was Roman Catholic. And there's a Senator Corn from Texas who was a disciple of Christ. And Lyndon Johnson may have been a disciple of Christ. And, of course, I thought we were all disciples of Christ, those of us who embraced Christianity. Sergei Prokofiev, the great Russian composer, died on this day. Another great pianist and Polish composer, very melodious music, Moritz Moszkowski, one of the greatest baritones who sang at the Metropolitan Opera, was actually Jewish religious heritage. Leonard Warren, he sang with Richard Tucker, who was also Jewish religious heritage. And, of course, Tucker was, they both of these boys, these men, I think originally were cantors. Great American writer William Carlos Williams died on this day. And remember Minnie Pearl? She died on this day. Among the events, James II gave a charter to William Penn to start the state of Pennsylvania. In 1789, the Constitution, we had 9 senators and 13 representatives. In 1791, Vermont, the Green Mountain State, became the 14th state. In 1793, George Washington gave the shortest inaugural speech. It was 133 words. He was the first president to be inaugurated in D.C. was Thomas Jefferson. Little Jamie Madison in 1809 was the first American president to be inaugurated when he was wearing clothes all made in America. In 1837, Chicago was incorporated as a city. It was founded by a black Frenchman, Jean Dusable. In fact, there's a famous black high school in Chicago named Dusable. And I think it's appropriate to play this interview of Colonel Robert McCormick, whose grandfather had started the Chicago Tribune. And Chicago Tribune had a long history of being connected with Chicago, being the tower that was situated there on the Chicago River. And I think this is an appropriate radio audio interview from our archives.
Ladies and gentlemen, from WGN's auditorium studio, we switch you to the scene of our new building ceremony. Go ahead, Lee Bennett at Illinois and St. Clair Street.
Thank you very much, John Mello, and good afternoon from a scene of great activity. Right before us here at Illinois and St. Clair Streets, preparations are being made for the digging of the huge pits for the first caissons upon which will rest a block-long addition to WGN and Tribune Tower. Here to take part in this significant ceremony is the man who has made this great undertaking possible, a man whose first thought has always been toward progress and ever-increasing service to the people of America and the Midwest. It is our proud privilege to introduce Colonel Robert R. McCormick, editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune and president of WGN Chicago, serving the Middle West. Ladies and gentlemen, Colonel Robert R. McCormick.
As excavation preparations are just about complete for the first caisson for this new building, our thoughts naturally look ahead toward tomorrow's world of radio, facsimile, FM, television, and newspaper service, which this undertaking portends. But quite understandably, our thoughts also travel backward, delving into that hectic past out of which had risen Tribune Tower and the WGN building as we know them today, and out of which will rise this new addition, which we will know tomorrow. That eventful past starts nearly 100 years ago, on June 10, 1847. For it is on that day that the Chicago Tribune was founded. The year 1847 marked more than the beginning of the Chicago Tribune. It was a year of numerous historical beginnings. Chicago was at the dawn of a new commercial and political era. The great new region west of the Alleghenies, something different from that part of the nation formed by the 13 colonies, was on the march. And Chicago was becoming its dynamic expression. This expression took the form of the creative mind. A free people set to work to make the dream of the human race come true. The first railroad was at hand. The telegraph outposts were near. The Illinois-Michigan Canal was about ready. Gas lights were around the corner. Plank roads were bringing the city out of the mud. The first stockyards had come, and the manufactured reaper. At this stage of creation, the first issue of the Chicago Tribune was launched. 400 copies printed in small frame buildings at the corner of Lake and LaSalle Street. And as Chicago grew, the Tribune grew. Larger quarters were found over Gary's grocery store at the corner of Lake and Randolph Street. Then, one spring morning in 1855, a young editor with reddish hair and a spare figure walked into the Tribune office. And thereafter, the paper's history was largely of his making. This man was Jonas Medill, and for his entire lifetime, he became the dominant figure of the Tribune in the Midwest. Through the Tribune, it was Medill who supported Abraham Lincoln and the sound American politics for which he stood. It was Medill whose fine character and outspoken American principles were reflected in every column of the paper's makeup. It was Medill who brought the paper through trying days of the Civil War and established the Tribune as the true voice of the Middle West. Sparing no effort or expense to serve the dynamic community with which it had grown. As Chicago and the Tribune grew, more and more space was needed in order to provide that ever-increasing service. And after moving from building to building, one of the world's finest newspaper plants was erected on Michigan Avenue in 1924. The building we know today is Tribune Tower. In the meantime, the Tribune Company had acquired station WGN, which was operated from leased studios at the Drake Hotel. As radio grew, it was apparent that this means of communication was to become an equally important service to the community as newspaper communication. The Tribune and station WGN have worked hand in hand in serving this community with radio, became such an important factor that additional quarters were soon needed for the Tribune's new child. So it was that one of the nation's finest broadcasting plants was erected next to the Tribune Tower in 1935. This building is familiar to all Chicagoans today as the home of WGN. This afternoon, WGN and the Tribune, carrying on the tireless service of Jonas Medill, again work hand in hand to provide even greater service to the community with which these organizations have grown. As we are about to begin work on the first caisson, which will rest on bedrock, we are reminded that Chicago and the Midwest are still expanding, and WGN and the Tribune will always expand too. Expand with the city and community with which we have grown by serving for more than 98 eventful years. The spirit of Jonas Medill is still with us, and our eyes are turned, as his were always turned, towards the future and the welfare of our beloved city and community, Chicago and the Midwest.
Thank you very much, Colonel McCormick.
Oh, that was from our archives, and I do Chicago. WGN used to broadcast the Cubs baseball games. He mentioned McCormick. Now, Robert McCormick, it was a colonel. He served in World War I, and if you ever visit Chicago, go out to his military museum. It's one of the finest private museums in the country. It's called Cotigny, a famous battle in World War I where Colonel McCormick had fought. And has a lot of memorabilia there. It's out in DuPage County. It's his former estate. He's dead now. Also, the name of Chicago, Black started it, was the founder, Jean-Baptiste DuSable. And I mentioned DuSable High School, named after him. It's kind of funny because politically ironic because Chicago had a reputation as being one of the most racist northern cities in up until recent history. They did have a black mayor, Harold Washington, who was baptized a Roman Catholic but grew up as a Methodist. I was in Chicago in 1988, and I happened to be walking past City Hall, and all of a sudden an ambulance pulled up, and I thought, oh, somebody had a heart attack or something, and it turned out that Harold Washington had dropped dead of a heart attack. Now, McCormick's name is very famous because Robert McCormick's ancestor, Cyrus, had invented the Reaper. And this is where they got the money for the newspaper. And, of course, the Reaper has been, I think it was purchased by another Canadian company, Massey Ferguson. Now, Joseph Medill was a Canadian who emigrated from Nova Scotia. interesting history of how the Canada. I did a series on Canadian contributions to America, and of course we have Canadian corruptors. We had an oil guy from Alberta. I forgot his name. We'll bring him up another day. He did a lot of stock manipulation down here in California, and caused one of the biggest political scandals in Southern California history. And of course we have the case of the corrupt Canadian. Born Judge Kevin Vincent Ryan, who will come up this month. This is the 17th year that Stephen Nery, U.S. Navy sailor, had been illegally incarcerated in the California Department of Corrections prisons. He was abused. He was believed to be drugged. He was raped. And he was railroaded here in San Francisco. And Kevin Ryan, a Canadian, who lied about how he entered the United States from Canada, claimed that he lived all his life in San Francisco, and that's impossible if he was born in Alberta, Canada, unless there was an immaculate conception. We'll get into that another day because there's a lot of dirt on this guy. He tried to become a federal judge, but he got exposed, and literally and figuratively, because he placed ads in the male prostitution newspaper. Going on here, we have the longest inaugural speech, and it cost the guy his life. In 1841, William Henry Harrison was the father of Benjamin Harrison. Harrison was the general who defeated Tecumseh, and was known as Tippecanoe and Tyler II. John Tyler was a Southerner who was the ancestor of Harry Truman. Anyway, Harrison gave the longest inaugural speech to date. It was 8,443 words, and he did it on a cold March date where he wasn't wearing a hat and caught pneumonia and died within 30 days. And now in 1849, the inauguration date up until Franklin Roosevelt's time was always March 3rd. Well, in 1849, the inauguration date arrived on a Sunday. So there was no president, but I guess you could call this guy Senator David Atkinson was president because he was president of the Senate. Among the events today, being back to the presidents, we had Rufus Duvain King. He was supposed to be the first gay vice president. He was the vice president in the James Buchanan administration, and he was also the shortest-lived vice president. He caught either pneumonia or tuberculosis when he was in Cuba, and he came back to America, and he's buried in Alabama. He died, I think, within 2 months after being inaugurated. In 1861, the Confederate States created their Stars and Bars flag. In 1861, it was the only time in American history where, until recently, where we had five former presidents who were alive. That was John Tyler, James Buchanan, I think Franklin Pierce, and one other. I forgot. Shame on me. until recently, we had Carter, Reagan, Clinton, and the Bushes. In 1863, Idaho, land of potatoes, and they have two wineries up there, can you believe that, was designated as a territory. Where we got our quarantine here on the West Coast? In 1881, California passed the first Plant Quarantine Act. In 1911, Wisconsin elected the first socialist to Congress, a guy named Victor Berger, and he also had a socialist mayor of Milwaukee. In 1917, Montana elected the first female member to Congress. They only have one representative there anyway. Another first for women in 1933 in the FDR administration, Frances Perkins became the first female cabinet member. They designated she became Secretary of Labor. A horrible thing for the Germans. In 1936, there was the first flight of the Hindenburg, and it later crashed at Lakehurst, New York. And we have a copy of that famous audio newscast. It was made by Chicago, I think WGN, as a matter of fact. It's a classic. We'll play it when the anniversary comes up. And the Teamsters should be aware of this. In 1964, Hoffa was convicted of jury tampering and went to prison. He said he was going to retake the Teamsters Union presidency, and they told him forget it. and he disappeared. He went to a meeting with some people at a restaurant in I think outside Detroit, and he was never seen again. Some people think that he is buried in one of the Michigan freeway caissons or something. 1974, Harold Wilson replaced Edward Heath. Now, Edward Heath was supposed to be, the allegation is that he was formerly a Nazi spy. He was also a bachelor. He conducted a piece of music called The Cocaine Overture by Edward Elgar. It didn't mean the stuff you snort. And he was also supposed to have been gay. Let's see. And then on this day, the bridge over the River Kwai, the veterans who survived returned there. And this is an important day for media. In 1978, Chicago Daily News, which was part of the Chicago Sun-Times, the competitor to the Chicago Tribune, they published their last edition. Now, Jay McMillan was a reporter there, a journalist. His wife was Jane Byrne, who later became a one-term mayor. She succeeded Blandick, who was the first Croatian mayor, and Jane Blandick was the first woman mayor of Chicago. They haven't been a woman since. 1991, BCCI divested itself of the First American Bank. Now, BCCI was supposed to have been involved in international drug running and money laundering. It involved many top people, Clark Clifford among them. Anyway, they set up a warehouse here in San Francisco and suspected it near the Hunters Point housing project, and suspected they were the supplier of drugs to the black community. In 1997, Clinton banned federal funding for cloning. Now, among the issues that we are bringing up, public policy issues, I think there's a growing epidemic of reckless driving and reckless bicycling. And it's cost, you know, the bicyclists especially don't, a lot of states do not require licenses, do not require rules of the road test. They don't require mandatory liability insurance, safety devices, headlight, brake light on the rear. And, of course, when there's an accident, there's a collision, somebody's injured or killed, it's the taxpayer who pays for this and the injured party's insurance if they have insurance. We think, as a matter of public policy, that this question should be posed. Should motorists and bicyclists who cause collisions have to retake rules of the road test, driving tests, bike tests, and a written test, and also have to pay for it? This might make them more conscious of their responsibilities on the road. Excuse me. And among the other things we're going to be looking at is by the way, I forgot, the origin of Chicago's name. It's a Menominee Indian name. Menominee was a tribe in the Midwest and primarily in Wisconsin. And of course, there's the Chippewa up in that area and also in Minnesota. But the name of Chicago in Menominee means land of the stinking onion. And the historical rumor is that when the white French settlers came there, like Father Marquette, he asked the Indians, what's that smell? And they said, Chicago, stinking onion. That's the rumor. Anyway, the historical rumor. So we'll be back Wednesday. We're going to have Patrick Butler up, and we'll be doing our annual trashing of the Irish, tongue-in-cheek, or I'll hold my tongue. Some people like to cut it off, and it'll be the topic will be our annual, some of the things you didn't know about the Irish and wish you didn't know or don't want to know. And we'll end with our usual theme, politics and poker, and, of course, this is very appropriate to Chicago and Cook County and Illinois politics.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the cash?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Impulse.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, better.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up and cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to mention
where to call the bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker! Politics and poker! Playing for a pot that's mediocre! Politics and poker! Running neck and neck! If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck!
We'll be back Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Good night.